Hello and welcome to this week's edition of The Modern Enthusiast. I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
And I'm James.
And we're here to talk about a variety of new modern topics, including integrating cons into modern. I know that we've talked about this a bit before, and we're going to be definitely talking about it more today. We have some interesting control decks that you would expect from Adam. He's excited to share one. I have a concept to share with the subtitle of Modern is Moving Toward Inevitable Deck Types. And we also have a few new tweaks on things that I think normally a lot of people, you know, when a new set comes out, they want to cram cards into existing decks and try and make it work. And so you end up seeing a lot of decks that have sort of suboptimal cards. You see this a lot in Standard. You see people saying like, oh, can this work in Splinter Twin in Modern? But people don't actually test it. We have actually tested results to tell you about today on one deck. So that's exciting. So if you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter. We are Modern Podcast on Twitter. You can also find the show notes at mtgcast.com. You can find all of our past episodes there also. We've gotten requests from people to add an RSS feed. We are working on it, but you have to understand that none of us know what we're doing. So if you have any ideas or you want to help out, please contact us through email. Also, one other thing, our Twitter account, Modern Podcast, just going to mention that again, currently has a generic picture. It's just the MTG Cast picture. So I wanted to lead us off with a discussion of what card is the archetypal modern card whose art we could use. And I want you, the listener, to chime in and let us know what we should change our picture to on Twitter. And the most creative, most interesting, most original, or most lightning bolty submission will just be turned into that. And you can look at your infamy. I know on MTG Cast, our banner is Chromanticore, and I put that there basically as a dig to Jason Alt, who is on Brainstorm Brewery. So Jason, if you're listening, feel insulted now. But we're looking for more modern flavors. So if you have suggestions, we want to hear. So, Adam, what do you think is the most modern, emblematic card that's also not Lightning Bolt and is kind of cool? So it's not Scalding Tarn.
Basic Island.
I think that you didn't listen to anything I said. James, what about you?
It's Perfect Bond. It's a card that's not really playable in Legacy. You can't play it in Standard because they're never going to reprint the card again. And it's one of the most format-defining cards in Modern. So if you had to pick a card that represents Modern as a format, I think Birthing Pot's probably the ideal card. I honestly couldn't picture the picture. It looks like not for the life of me. So it might be a terrible art picture.
It's some sort of H.R. Geiger-inspired aliens thing. That's what the entire Plane of Phyrexia was.
Yeah, but like that particular card is very interesting. I mean, it is one of those powerful cards in Modern, probably, you know, top 5 or top 10, but it's basically completely unplayable in Legacy unless you're that one gentleman from the Chicago area who keeps playing with it in the Star City Circuit.
See, and here's the thing, too. You could use Dark Confidant or Tarmogoyf, but I feel like those as art pictures have been used everywhere. It's indistinguishable from Legacy where those are also used.
That's what I was saying. I mean, Birthing Pod is just that card. I was trying to think of what card is playable in Modern, extremely playable in Modern, but not playable in Legacy. I think your choices like that, Cryptic Command or Remand.
Let me posit also Gifts Ungiven is an interesting card. It has good art. It harkens to the idea of Modern in which there is a deep card pool from which you can choose. I think that's neat. It is not extremely playable, but Adam and I have both cast that spell during our time in Modern, so... but also, I don't know that yet another thing should be idolized with Gifts Ungiven. Listeners, if you have a suggestion, and we will even entertain things like Cryptic Command and Remand, please let us know, and we'll put it to a completely unscientific discussion next week.
We will never do the full art Cryptic Command, though, because, on principle, if I hate that full art card, so yes. Enough of that art anymore.
Too many modes.
If there's ever a card that didn't need full artwork, that was one.
In fact, the one that trumps it, I had seen somebody mock up a really respectable, nice-looking copy of Ice Cauldron as a textless promo. And I would have loved Ice Cauldron. Readers, if you don't remember Ice Cauldron from Ice Age, I will not even attempt to describe it to you, but you should just go look it up, read what it does, read the card, read the Oracle, try and figure out what it does. Try and mechanically use it a couple times to see why you might want to use it, but the basic idea is that it stores mana for you at an opponent's end step so that you can cast a bigger fireball during your turn.
Man, I kind of want this now, the Duglin full-text cards. There'll be Ice Cauldron and Chains of Mistopheles.
I did play Ice Cauldron in Commander for quite a while in a five-color enchantments deck because it was goofy, and I think you should play goofy cards in Commander, and also because if you're playing something where you're playing a lot of counterspells or reactive stuff, Ice Cauldron is actually really good because it does let you stash mana, so you can be like, end of turn, stash a Stroke of Genius on my turn, cast it for very few mana. Texless Sylvan Library would be interesting. Oh, we need to actually get into Modern here. I had a pre-release experience where I played Jeskai because they were out of the other clan packs. I played Two-Headed Giant, and my Two-Headed Giant partner had Jeskai Ascendancy, and I had kind of poo-pooed the card and thinking that it doesn't do a whole lot in Constructed that you would think, because you end up, like, it rewards playing creatures. It says whenever you cast a non-creature, non-land spell, all your creatures get +1/+1 and you untap them. And also when you do that, you can choose to draw a card and discard a card. So my thought was that you'd draw the wrong half of your deck with a prowess card. And then you'd be like, well, I have a bunch of creatures that don't get any effect. But it turns out it was very good in Limited. Cause it allows you to dig through to better stuff, to cycle away lands. It gives all your guys vigilance because you declare attackers and then you cast your spell during the attacker's phase to untap them. It got me thinking about its Modern applications. So with the idea that you want to play creatures that are not creatures, you can play things like Lingering Souls with it. Obviously when you're digging, there are things that you want to discard, so you can discard Think Twice, and then you can still get another cast off of it because it has flashback. We were also talking about big, dumb, goofy combos, and it does make an infinite combo with Sprout Swarm, because you buy back Sprout Swarm, and then you can start convoking it with the tokens, and every time you cast it with the Ascendancy, you untap all your tokens, and then you can keep Sprout Swarming. So that's a 4-mana, or 4 different colored mana, 2-card combo.
Sprout Swarm, 1 green or 2 green?
Sprout Swarm
one costs... green and a buyback of 3. Right.
And it has Convoke. It's an interesting card. I don't think it's Modern playable, but Splinter Twin is not Modern playable aside from having Deceiver Exarch. So I thought it was an interesting idea.
You saw my mind spinning about the Ascendancy of Burn at the Stake. And I'd actually need Adam to look at the Oracle text exactly for Burn at the Stake. But it's something along the lines of you tap X number of creatures.
Burn at the Stakes, I think it's 3 red and 2.
It's 3 and 2 red.
3 and 2 red.
I think. Look at the Oracle Fest. The essence of the card is you tap creatures to do like 3 times the amount of damage done to the creatures, and then they would trigger the Ascendancy and you would untap all of your creatures.
2 and 3 red. Is an additional cost, tap any number of untapped creatures, deals 3 times the number of creatures you tap this way. So it turns each of your creatures into a lightning bolt.
And it seems pretty powerful to tap all your creatures, turn them into a lightning bolt, untap all your creatures with the Ascendancy, and then attack all of your creatures for 2, because it turns all of your creatures into 5, potentially 5 damage. Mm-hmm. You would only need 4 creatures.
Yeah, you need 1 Lingering Souls flashback to do
it. Yeah, you only need 4 creatures to kill your opponent. And then I was thinking, you have the new token-generating soldier, Azbat Marshall, maybe it's the 1/2 for 1 white that taps that to make tokens. Mm-hmm. And you have the one that makes 2 1/1 white soldiers for 1 white.
You have Raise the Alarm.
Raise the Alarm. And then you have Spectral Possession. And that gets you a lot of tokens very quickly. You have Ascendancy, and then you can Burn the Stake, and you can kill people very quickly.
The fascinating thing is that if we're doing an arbitrary number of Sprout Swarms to draw, or to make a whole bunch, you also get to loot every time. So you can loot down all the way to a kill spell. If you have an extra card in hand, you can loot all the way to your 1 copy of Burn at the Stake.
So that actually has a lot more promise than I was thinking when Doug was just kicking it around. But you can do a lot of damage.
It's a lot of colors, but if you play all of the different spell token makers, or the ones that are good, you definitely get through your deck real quickly with that. Mm-hmm. Triplicate Spirits is probably also sweet with that, too, because it doesn't require you, after you are in the process of getting tokens, it doesn't require you to actually tap lands to cast.
So I think the end result is that next Tuesday, if you are playing a game swap in Mason, Ohio, you can expect all 3 of us to be playing stupid Jeskai Ascendancy decks. So just pack your Nature's Claims. You'll beat us. You'll get an easy 1-0 on your record.
Maybe about 2 weeks before I play that, because I want to get enough score cards to actually buy Ascendancies with. The whole
I don't know if I want to pay actual money for Ascendancy. I think I want to use credit.
Though, this kind of harkens back
to... I don't think you actually have to pay money for Burn at the Stakes.
This kind of harkens back. There was a Travis Wu video, and I gotta find this and just, like, permanently link it on our Facebook somehow, or our Twitter somehow. There was a Travis Wu video from back in about July, and he's playing Liquid Metal Coating in a, like, rug deck. And he makes this very interesting point, which is that if you're playing a modern deck that plays, you know, Electrolyze, Lightning Bolt, Remand, you know, the Gitaxian Probe and your other cantrips, Sleight of Hand, Seer Visions, that those cards are so powerful, especially in the framework of Modern, that it almost doesn't matter what your other cards are. And this is more of the same. I mean, Spectral Possession is a very powerful card, even in Modern. So, like, you're playing a lot of cards that are very powerful that can trigger off this ascendancy that are also just, like, format staples, so I don't think I'd ever be embarrassed bringing a deck that was at least made up of two-thirds format staples, even if it was doing something that was a little unconventional or even silly.
Cards that are armies in a can have always been, like, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stuff like Cloud Goat Ranger, which in and of itself is probably a little bit more playable in Modern than people give it credit for. I mean, like, it dies to your standard lightning bolts and stuff, but...
And it kills with Burn at the Stake, plus Ascendancy, and just one card combo. That's all four guys right there.
But, yeah, cards like that are definitely playable, and if you're trying to make a deck that you can win with and have fun at a little local 4 or 5 round thing, like, that's the kind of, that's the place to play a deck like Sprout Swarm, Jeskai Ascendancy, like, where you can sort of just win and have fun and have mm-hmm. your friends salt on you.
And there's a lot of value to be had in Modern by playing a deck that's a little unconventional.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the basis of how the Blue-White-Red Splinter Twin deck originally came to be. I mean, there's a lot of value to be gained if you're playing a deck that you've tested and you've, you know, honed to be pretty good, that also catches people off guard. That's how some gentleman made Day 2 of Grand Prix Boston playing a Hoken deck. So, I mean, there is a lot of value to be gained in this format specifically, between both knowing the format and having a deck where your opponents aren't quite sure what's going on.
I think it's because the pillars of the format are so common, is that when either you look like you're playing one of the pillar decks and you're not, or you're just doing something outrageous or under the radar, it's a lot harder to deal with, because a lot of people have a lot of sideboard cards that are prepared for things like Birthing Pod and Splinter Twin and Affinity, but all of a sudden you're doing, you know, we'll stay with the Jeskai Ascendancy deck. You're casting Jeskai Ascendancy and then Sprout Swarm and trying to make infinite tokens. I mean, I don't know how many decks are ready for you to do that on their end step.
Yeah.
To have been kill you. So
how many Burn the Stakes is the right number for this?
4 or 3? 4, obviously.
I don't think about the full 4, but, like, I'm already, like, making a list in my head. I mean, it's got Raise the Alarm, and we're gonna play, I mean, we're gonna make a bunch of white tokens, and then have some blue counterspells and some red removal, and then I'm gonna Burn the Stakes to people.
I recall back probably 7 years now, in Vintage, Gifts Ungiven had been printed, and my Magic team Mean Deck, had come up with a deck that had run 4 Gifts Ungiven, 4 Merchant's Girl, 4 Brainstorm, back when all of those things were legal as 4 ofs. And it succeeded in eventually getting all 3 of those cards restricted, because being able to Merchant Scroll for Ancestral Recall and then the next turn Merchant Scroll for Misdirection to protect it was quite, quite good. And also Gifts Ungiven is just as good of a card as people think. But somebody who else in Vintage, Andy Probasco, had played the deck, and our version won by casting Gifts for Yawgmoth's Will, Tinker, Recoup, and I think Black Lotus, with the idea being that you'd recoup your Yawgmoth's Will, you play Black Lotus, you tinker into Blight or Darksteel Colossus at the time, and then you'd Time Walk, and then you could Time Walk twice if you had Yawgmoth's Will, and then you'd just kill them twice with Darksteel Colossus. I keep saying Blightsteel. Andy had taken the deck, taken out Tinker and Darksteel Colossus, and just put in 2 Mishra's Factories and won a tournament undefeated with it. It was kind of like a lesson from Professor Andy of, let me show you just how powerful 4 Merchant Scroll, 4 Gifts, 4 Brainstorm are, that I will put a pair of Mishra's Factories in and still win this entire event with that as my kill condition. So I guess the idea being that if your core is strong enough, you can play silly stuff, but I don't know if it would be optimal to play silly stuff.
I think Modern is a format, as a format right now, is very much like Legacy, where there's not a ton of room to brew just because the big decks are very consistent. They're very, a lot of them are very linear, and they're very powerful. So that when you're doing something that's not normal in the format, it's got to be powerful enough or difficult enough to interact with that it sort of doesn't matter that you're not playing like one of the normal decks. But the Jeskai thing is kind of interesting too, because if we're playing some of the normal removal spells like Lightning Bolt and stuff, and we make a bunch of tokens, the actual Ascendancy functions sort of as a ritual, or not a ritual, an anthem as well.
You know,
like, bolt your opponent, you know, all my 5/1/1s are all 2/2s all of a sudden, and I'm coming across for 10.
I had found that even when I was just tinkering around with a dumb standard deck I brewed together, was that you would do things like raise the alarm, and then you would cast two spells on your Ascendancy, and you'd be getting with 2/3/3s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes your guys into real threats very quickly, and we've seen in this format that you can spend a card on, like, Honor of the Pure, and that's decent. But you can spend one more mana, you can get Ascendancy, and instead of Honor of the Pure, you have this, like, variable scale thing. Where maybe your Lingering Souls gives everybody +2/+2.
That makes combat for your opponent miserable.
It's terrible.
Going both ways on attack and defense, because they can't attack into you having 5 tap tokens, because you're like, all right, cast this, raise the alarm, untap all my guys, and all of a sudden I've got, you know, a huge team, and it works just the other way too. Like, well, he's only got 4/1/1s right now, but, you know, like, you have all your spells up, and you take a lot, and I think that effect definitely gets amplified in Modern when you've got ridiculously efficient cards like Lightning Bolt and Snapcaster Mage to replay them all too. So
I had so I think that the nexus of this is going to be involving some sort of flashback card, or lots of flashback cards, because the ability to for example think twice and get +2/+2 and also 2 on taps is fantastic. I'm sure there is a flashback card that exists in Modern that involves tapping creatures, because there's Battle Screech. So if you can find, I don't think Battle Screech is in Modern, but a card like Battle Screech gets pretty interesting when you have Jeskai Ascendancy out. Changing topics a little bit, I have done a little bit more testing with Hardened Scales and Affinity, specifically by, you add an Arcbound Worker, it's the easy swap, you take out an Soul Artifact or things like that. It is fantastic in the deck. I have to compel our readers, you should try it out. I will be trying it out soon, because James has informed me he has all of the paper cards for Affinity, which is nice. It's good to have friends. I think that's harkening back to what episode 5 or 6 of Playing on a Budget is, have friends who have cards.
Step one, have friends.
Yeah. So I will be returning with more results about that. One more thing that came up, you know, one of the consistent things with nuanced cards, Johnny cards, things that ask you to do a lot, is that their power may not be immediately obvious, and we have certainly been burned on them in the past. So, I believe Temporal something, the miracle that lets you time walk. Temporal Mastery, when that was spoiled, people thought that it would be an automatic 4 of in Legacy. It's very easy to trigger time walks. You have Personal Tutor. There are ways to set it up. Standard would love it. It ended up going from a $35 pre-order to a $4 card. The 5-mana Time Twister was also a big deal for a while. I think that was a $40 pre-order, thanks to some people hyping it up on Magic YouTube videos. It turns out that when you pay extra mana for a Power 9 spell, it's not as good as just paying the retail price of the Power 9 spell, which I guess is a bit of a segue into talking about Treasure Cruise.
I just can't imagine how anyone fell for that 5-mana, like, Time Twister. Because the only decks that are very interested in Time Twister were decks that want to combo off very quickly with Moxen or Rituals.
It's when you have mana floating into the Time Twister is what matters.
It's very hard to have mana floating into your 7 drop. It's not like it's the Legacy one that untaps 6 lands, Time Spiral. So that card always just kind of... I couldn't fathom how that card started.
That's because people get... Totally separate note, but people get very excited when there are functional reprints of really old, like, vintage and legacy cards, and people love playing them. So there's always infinite hype around those cards. I think they're all mythic rares, too, which in this day and age certainly contributes to having very elevated pre-order prices.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing with, we talked a little bit last week, and we're going to talk about it again today. Cards like Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time, which are functional, you know, reprints of old cards that people like playing with Ancestral Memories and Ancestral Recall. And you have to recognize that those cards can still be good and they can still be playable, but just because this is a powerful effect doesn't mean that it is suddenly playable in all these other formats, because what makes cards like Time Twister and Wheel of Fortune good is that you play your whole hand out, mm-hmm. and then those cards read that you draw 7 cards while you have a bunch of mana floating, and your opponent has to draw a different 7 that they didn't necessarily want to keep.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes those cards really good. And in formats like Standard and in Modern to a little bit of a lesser extent, you don't have those, like, all the fast mana and things that you can play in the old formats and all this broken stuff that you're doing to get to these cards. So... you have to take all that with a grain of salt. But by and large, people just get really excited for cards that look mm-hmm. like cards that we got to play with 10 or 15 years ago.
I believe it's been a while since we've had something with the word Lotus printed in it. Lotus typically gets people nuts. One brief thing aside about Time Twister and Wheel is that now and then you would have the hands that were like Volcanic Island, Mana Crypt, Wheel of Fortune on turn one, force mulligan you into an awful hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that with the more expensive stuff. I mean, you can't... Treasure Cruise is an example. You cannot keep a one lander with Treasure Cruise the way you can with Ancestral Recall, which makes people immediately dismiss it. I thought I was pretty dismissive of it. Karsten Cotter had written an interesting article on Star City in the past week, specifically about Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time and Legacy, and the bottom line of it was, these cards are much more castable than you think they are.
Treasure Cruise is awesome. My concern with Treasure Cruise, as it relates to the format of Modern, is that Treasure Cruise is not particularly compatible with Snapcaster Mage, and so I am kind of hard-pressed to think that there's a deck out there that would prefer to Ancestral Recall than a 2-1 body and a flashback. When that recall doesn't happen until turn 4 to 6. But I played Treasure Cruise at the pre-release, and I think I managed to cast one in a constructed game of Standard the other day on turn 3 or turn 4, and that card is certainly very powerful. It is a draw 3 very quickly. Putting 7 cards in your yard is not nearly as difficult as, you know, one would previously assume. Mm-hmm.
The thing about the delve cards that draw you cards, too, is that they are... like, they feed themselves, because with Treasure Cruise, you might exile 4, 6, however many cards you're delving with it, draw 3, and your spells, presumably you're drawing more spells or more gas, and they are, it's refueling for your next one, which, you know, probably isn't quite as much, but it's fine. And in format, in the older formats, and even now in Standard, we have Fetchlands, like, Fetchland plus a spell, like, that starts getting a lot of stuff into your yard for that delve mm-hmm. stuff. And in some of the newer formats, like Standard, it's a little bit slower, so you don't have to delve all 7 cards off of Treasure Cruise, mm-hmm. so you're only casting 1. And, like, drawing cards is good.
Now, what Karsten had honed in on was that it does not hurt your Tarmogoyfs very much, so you can still play them,
mm-hmm.
which is good and interesting in a rug or bug deck in Modern. He had honed in that, like you said, Treasure Cruise feeds itself, and that you don't have to delve away all the cards, right. That you can delve away 4 and leave 3 remaining in your graveyard for the next Treasure Cruise.
Or for your Tarmogoyf.
Or for your, yeah, and he certainly said, you know, you can get rid of all your sorceries, because Treasure Cruise is a sorcery on its own.
Mm-hmm.
he had also mentioned Dig Through Time. I had been tinkering around with this. Dig Through Time is an amazing card, and I think it's amazing when you have threats that when you, or cards that when you cast them, they do big things. Wrath of God, Batterskull, Wormcoil Engine are cards that do big things. Karsten said that when he played it in a blue-white control deck, he was mostly getting, like, two cantrips. He was getting Brainstorm and Ponder or Preordain or things like that. And that is, you know, those cards feed it, but they aren't splashy. They aren't interesting. But if you're digging through to try and get something like your Splinter Twin or your Sphinx's Revelation or your Wrath of God or your Elspeth or something, it gets a lot more interesting. One point that he had made also is he posted a deck with Elixir of Immortality, with the idea being that you can use Delve to selectively trim cards out of your graveyard so that you don't shuffle them back with Elixir. So presumably you play a very defensive deck through the course of the game. You use Elixir to shuffle back a couple times, and in that time you're using Dig or Treasure Cruise for that matter to take out all the cards you never want to see. So maybe end of turn you discard or you cast something, or let's say you just don't want to see fetch lands anymore. You delve those away, and then when you eventually Elixir, you make your deck much more concentrated. I think when I mentioned at the top of the show that we're moving toward inevitability, I think Modern will eventually get to a deck like that that just wins with Elixir of Immortality and maybe some iteration of Jace, some white Planeswalker, with the idea that every single turn you're drawing very powerful cards.
You streamline your deck down to being, you know, the 30 or the 20 cards that you actually want, and then you get to the end of that.
Yeah, and you know, Dig is an instant, and it costs 8 mana, but you will reach a point with a control deck where you have 8 mana, and you're going to go, okay, end of turn, nothing, Dig Through Time.
Yeah.
Find my Elixir, find a Lightning Bolt, bolt you, my turn, Elixir. Dig again, find something else.
That was going to be my point with a card like Dig Through Time that's an instant, where, like, it's good in the control decks because you'll get to the point in the game where delving it is irrelevant. Your opponent does nothing on their turn.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, all right, tap 6 or 7 mana, delve a card, or even 8 mana, and delve nothing. It doesn't matter, and just find the 2 best cards in the 7. And in a control deck, when you look at 7 cards in any format, it's hard to not find something to do.
So. And I'm just going to be reapproaching decks like blue-red combo all-in twin, trying to run 2 or 3 Dig Through Time with it, because those decks fall apart when you get hit with discard or you run into a counterspell. They stock their graveyard completely, and I want to have that game where it's like, it's turn 5, it's my opponent's end step, I dig, I delve to pay 2 mana, I see the Deceiver Exarch, I see the Splinter Twin, I cast the Exarch at their end of turn, and I combo out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It lets you recharge in an amazing way.
Well, I actually think in like some of these delve decks, it lets you play some other very interesting cards that had previously not seen a ton of play. I'm thinking of the Phyrexian Regrowth, that's a card top of your library.
Noxious Revival.
Like
Obnoxious Revival.
You can wind up with a deck now that plays 4 Thought Scour and Snapcaster Mage, and then actually playing some of these Delve cards and get to the point where you're feeding your Delve cards, but now you also have your graveyard as a place where you can get cards back from with Snapcaster Mages in blue. So you can cast things there, so you can mill yourself, which turns out your Snapcaster Mages, and also dig. So actually, it might not be that bad of a combo with Snapcaster Mage after all, because you can play cards that self-mill as a way of feeding your graveyard, because
Thought Scour is awesome.
Thought Scour turns on these Delve cards something fierce, because the Thought Scour is 3 cards to your Yargs and mills 2 and goes there on its own, which is a little under halfway to a Treasure Cruise. But, like, if you go Fetchland Thought Scour, you are halfway to Treasure Cruise. You're 4 out of 7 mana for Treasure Cruise, right? Mm-hmm. Or is Treasure Cruise also 8, 7 to 1?
It costs a total of 8.
Yeah. So you're, like, I mean, on turn 1, you can be halfway to either Dig Through Depths or Treasure Cruise just by going Fetchland Thought Scour yourself. That's 4 cards on turn 1. And so some Lightning Bolts and some Taxium Probes and things like that later, you could very easily actually turn on almost all of those cards.
I really like your concept, though, Doug, of using Delve to actually sort of recycle the stuff that you don't want and then being able to continually loop.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an interesting concept.
What is
like,
that?
You're using the Delve to sort of, it's like turning into one of those Ascension combo decks, like the card game Ascension, like the deck where you want to recycle all the crappy stuff you start with at the beginning and just keep...
Cast your deck every turn.
Keep casting your whole deck every single turn.
What color deck does that look like? Is that a bug deck if you're going to try that in Modern, if you're going to...
Well, you have Gaia's Blessing in the format because it's time-shifted. I don't know that you'd want to use it because Elixir is probably better.
Elixir's solid.
I think if I'm recycling my deck has Lightning Bolt in it.
Well, but if you have Lightning Bolt, this goes back to you can play Lightning Bolt, Lightning Helix, Electrolyze, and Snapcaster Mages, and not just faster than trying to recycle your deck 10 times.
We'll come up with the list in the next couple of weeks.
We will. I was thinking that we could have a listener drinking game in which the listeners would drink every time they heard James forget a card name, but I think that that would be irresponsible for public health, and I think you should drink in the miraculous opportunity when James actually remembers a card name.
So, Doug's mistake is thinking about ever knowing these card names. I just know what the cards do.
It's going to be a drain your drink rare opportunity.
This is why all my cards are in foreign languages. I know what they do and I know what the picture is.
I have had to tell James what the card for Flooded Strand is named.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. The other day I was trying to come up with the entire cycle of fetch lands that they're going to be in Standard, and I could get the four just by color combination. I don't care what the fifth one was. It's like, it's something.
This just speaks to the idea that you could reskin Magic as a space fantasy card, steampunk, whatever card game, and it would apparently still work all the same way to James because there's no amount of flavor or interesting names that work.
Exactly.
Except for Fodder Lunch. Fodder Cannon, so.
Fodder Cannon.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had talked about
Everyone's
how...
He's got a drink now, by the way.
No, he originally called it Fodder Lunch.
Yeah.
It was fine. People are safe. You can remain sober through this show.
No, Fodder Lunch is a card. It's the... Second dude, -5/-5, take 5 card from Lorwyn.
I stand corrected. I do not see an opportunity for delve cards in Modern that do not feed themselves like the draw cards do. Like, the 4 mana and 1 black destroy a creature. I don't think that has a home. It certainly doesn't kill a mana elf on turn 1, which is what any removal spell should be able to do.
I don't know, I think that one's pretty sweet. The only ones I don't like in Modern, I don't like the Double Edict that costs a million. I think it's Dead Drop.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Double Edict that costs, I think, 9 or 10.
It costs 10 total.
Yeah, that card I think is unplayable. Though we did have a reader on Twitter say he was going to put that in a mono black Tron deck, and I'd like to see if that works out.
It is lighter on the mana than Damnation is. The fact that Damnation exists makes it a lot harder.
I was going to say, it is awkward to me that you could have Tron online and a Signet and you still
don't have enough mana to cast it.
So, I'm thinking that that's probably not going to be playable, but, you know, if you could prove me wrong, I would love to see people play that card because it has alligators on it.
I don't know if the 5 mana Delve removal spell is playable in Modern. It's certainly not a card you're playing 4 of in Modern, but... Mm-hmm. As a supplemental removal spell to some of your other things, it might be playable because because James and I were talking about this at lunch today, and the great joke about Magic, sort of, is that black, even though it has a reputation for having really good removal, really doesn't have good removal.
Mm-hmm.
White and the red removal in the history of Magic has always been better. There were just long stretches where some of those cards weren't legal and people turned to cards like Terror, which really are not that good, but were the best that you could play at a given time. So I think that card, where it stacks up to other black removal spells that you could play in Modern, it's actually fairly decent. It's not a card you can just throw in any deck, and it's not a card that I think you can effectively play as a 4 of, but supplementing your Abrupt Decays or... Maelstrom Pulses and Putrefies, it seems not like the worst.
It's like Ghastly Demise in that regard, although I'll observe that all these Delve cards play incredibly poorly with Dark Confidant. And if we're going to be playing black spells, we have to ask ourselves why we're not playing Bobby Digital. And I think that, you know, if you're playing, like, for example, a Gifts Ungiven deck, having a different colored named kill spell is good. Certainly having something that says just destroy target creature is really good. Because I found in that deck, I think the last time I was playing when Deathrite Shaman was legal, but there was no real way to kill a Deathrite Shaman, which was awful. And you had to run white primarily so that you could path to exile, and then flashback on burial rites, but I think you make it easier on the mana for the decks that are looking for, you know, will you pay 3 mana to kill a creature? Possibly, because you can play Putrefy. Putrefy is a modern playable card. Will you pay 2? Probably, absolutely, you'd like to pay 1 every time. Well, listeners, thanks for following along as we discuss cons. And certainly, we didn't intend for the podcast in the past months to be all about cons. It certainly wasn't that way for previous sets because they just plainly weren't as interesting as cons is. So we are going to be testing, bringing you results, and bringing you heartbreak and failures as none of our Jeskai Ascendancy / Sprout Swarm decks actually do anything. If you have ideas about how to apply cons cards, or you have the broken cons Ascendancy combo that we missed, and we did remember Flame Fusillade, by the way. But if you have combos like that that you want to talk about, definitely get a hold of us on Twitter. You can find our email address at mtgcast.com when you find our show notes. And until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm Adam.
And I'm James.
And this has been The Modern Enthusiast.